I'm Ann Davison. I'm 57 years old. Today is Tuesday, June 15th, 2021. I'm in Basie, Virginia in the United States. And I'm here with Marty Harding, a neighbor and friend.
And I am Marty Harding. I'm 84 years old. Today is June 15th of 2021. And I'm here in my home at 45 Keith Place, Basie, Virginia.
So, Marty, you're 85 years old?
84.
84. Okay. So, where were you born, Marty?
Fredericksburg, Virginia, Mary Washington Hospital, only because since my parents lived in Culpeper County and there was no hospital there, they went to the adjacent county, Spotsylvania, which means I was born in Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Tell me a little bit about those early years of your life. What was your childhood like?
Well, my father was a sharecropper. We lived on a farm raising corn and wheat. My mother was a school bus driver so that I could go to the Consolidated County High School in Culpeper, Virginia. I lived in a small village called Richardsville, fourth class post office, 53 families, but very sparsely settled. But I did get to go to the Consolidated County High School in Culpeper.
So did you work on the farm a lot in your early years?
Well, yes. Of course, we had all the farm animals from pigs to chickens to cows. I milked the two cows, separated the cream from the milk, and then churned butter from the cream. I fed the chickens, collected the eggs, and of course we had doggies and kitty cats, as most farm families did.
So who were some of the early influencers in your life?
Well, I think that my teachers were early influences, but so was my Baptist minister, Reverend Butchard, and I gave my life to the Lord when I was 8 years old under his direct influence.
So your family was very active in that church, or?
Absolutely. My father was a deacon, and my mother led the choir. And after taking piano lessons for several years, I played the piano in that church.
So I know that you went on to college. Was that a usual path for young ladies your age in that community?
Well, actually, I was the first member of our family to go to college, and I went on a scholarship that I earned as valedictorian of that Consolidated High School in Culpeper. The name of that college was Strayer, in Washington, D.C., and now it's Strayer University in several southeastern states.
And who or what was it that inspired you to go to college in the first place?
Well, because my mother had to quit school in the sixth grade, and my father quit in the fourth grade to help on the family farm, of which he was a member. And my mother worked in a shoe factory to help support the other members of her family. They both wanted their daughter to be educated. And I guess I adhered to their desire, but selfishly, I think it was my desire too.
Did you have a particular career in mind at that point?
Well, in the high school, I enrolled in what was called college preparatory course, seeking whatever scholarship offers that came to me. And the first one that came to me was from Longwood College, which is south of Richmond, Virginia, but it only covered my tuition. It is a four-year college. And my parents couldn't afford the, I guess, other expenses other than the tuition. So then I changed my course to business at Culpeper County High School, and I competed for a scholarship that would be completely paid, and that was done at Strayer College in Washington, D.C.
So you went up as a young woman by yourself to Washington, D.C. What year would this have been?
1955.
And where did you live in town?
Well, I lived with my father's sister in Alexandria, Virginia. So I took the BB and W bus over to Washington, D.C. every day. And at that time, it was only a dime to go. So it was very reasonable. But of course, walking was an exercise that we never minded when you're 19 years old either. And my aunt was very glad to have me. And as soon as I got the offer to go to work on Capitol Hill, I relocated and had an apartment to myself at DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C. at the age of 19.
Wow. Was that that seems kind of surprising to be a young woman alone, 19 at that time in DuPont Circle?
Well, the streetcar came right by there, and I went right to Capitol Hill and was just within a few steps of the Cannon House office building where I worked, and was very safe. I felt very secure, and it didn't seem challenging in those days.
So tell me some more about your job on Capitol Hill. Who were you working for?
Well, I first went to work for Congressman George Grant from the 2nd Congressional District of Alabama. In 1963, however, Barry Goldwater ran for president, and Alabama voted to go with Senator Goldwater, which meant that a Democratic congressman lost his seat. So thereby I lost my job and sought another one, and I went to work for a second member of Congress, Congressman Frank Stubblefield from Murray, Kentucky, which is in the southwestern part of the state. And I worked for him until, unfortunately, he died of lung cancer. And of course, he was representing a tobacco state because a great deal of tobacco is grown in that section of Kentucky. But when he passed away, and of course, I lost my job. I went to work for the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, who was Jamie Whitten from Charleston, Mississippi. And I worked for Congressman Whitten until I retired in 1981. So I was on the Hill from 1955 to 1981.
Wow. So how did the Hill change in those years?
Well, of course, not as much change as we see currently in our country, but because the three members that I had worked for are all from rural areas, my whole way of thinking was agricultural, what's best for the farmers. And I guess that fit in so well with my growing up in a sharecropper's home because that was my father's occupation.
What were your responsibilities?
Well, in all three offices, I, of course, having had a business education and being able to take shorthand, transcribe it, etc., I worked very closely with the member who often had to make public addresses, who had to write his own speeches. And because I was equipped to take down what he said, we went through a great deal of editing. And one of my strong points was correcting grammar. And so I guess you would say I edited their speeches a great deal, particularly before they were printed in the Congressional Record. And so I had a very close relationship to all three members in that way.
You told me a funny story once about some of the unofficial responsibilities with a story about some constituents coming to town.
Oh, yes. Well, in Mississippi, of course, and I won't say this was a backward way, but they had heard a great deal about crime in the District of Columbia. So when they came to see the member of Congress, they packed a pistol. Well, to get into the Rayburn House office building where their member's office was, they were searched at the door by a Capitol policeman. And the pistol was confiscated. And the next thing the member heard was that these two people, man and his wife, had been taken down to jail at the U.S. District Judicial Center. So again, I was very close to the member, and he asked me to go down and get them out of jail. Well, of course, I had never had any experience in this area, but I took the streetcar down to the jail and was ushered in to see the district judge under whose authority they had been confined. And he looked up at me and he said, "Margaret Harding, are you Marty Harding?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And I said, "Are you Stan Harris?" Because when I knew him, he had been the son of the Washington baseball team's coach, and that was Bucky Harris. And I had no idea that he had been made a federal judge, but there he was, sitting in his robe with spectacles on. And once we got reacquainted with each other, and I told him that the congressman had sent me down to get constituents out of jail, we all sort of laughed about it. And he said, "But we're going to have to keep their pistol." And I said, "You can have the pistol, but let me escort the congressman's constituents back to the Rayburn House office building." And so that's how it ended.
So what did you do as a young woman for fun in Washington in those days? You weren't working.
Well, I was married at the age of 20 to a college student at the University of Virginia with whom I had been a childhood sweetheart back at that Consolidated County High School in Culpeper. And he was an ROTC graduate at the University of Virginia and had been assigned to the 3rd Infantry at Fort Myer, Virginia, and was in charge of the honor guard there. So as the wife of a second lieutenant, I got to go to all of the Army functions at Fort Myer. And one of those functions was the visitation of Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip. And I think it was 1958, as best I remember. I do know I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go over and get a seat on the parade ground so that I could see the Queen and Prince. And I was amazed that the prince had to walk behind the queen because she was escorted by the chairman of the military district of Washington, who was, I believe, maybe a two-star general. But at any rate, I became so fascinated with the procession as it went by, and I had my little Kodak box camera, and when the film was developed, all it was a blur, because I guess I moved the camera rather than clicking it on either the Queen or Prince Philip. But that's the kind of thing I got to do, which was very special, of course. And then the other things that I got to do, which really remain vividly in my mind today, was to watch the inauguration, first of President Eisenhower, his second term. I went to work there in 55, that was in 56. And then every 4 years after that, because I worked for a senior member of Congress, I was always given a seat on the east side of the Capitol, except when President Reagan came, it moved to the west side of the Capitol. And but I watched the swearing in of each of the presidents for the entire time that I worked in the Congress.
What are some of the key moments in U.S. history that are very vivid for you, particularly being in Washington?
Of course, we always loved the fact that we had access to the White House. Earlier in the time I was there, security wasn't an issue the way it has increasingly become. And for example, when my parents came to visit me, they thought it very special, as did I, that I could get them to go to the White House. And of course, we only saw the select rooms that the public sees today. But a time or two on the east side of the White House, you would see members of the president's family. For example, I went to night school at George Washington University for 4 years to get my degree. During the time I was there, Linda Bird Johnson's daughter, who incidentally married a Marine who became a U.S. Senator, of course, but she was in the same history class that I was in. She had transferred from the University of Texas because her dad had succeeded President Kennedy as president. And her Secret Service men, of course, came with her to the classes. And I usually like to sit on the front row so I could hear the professor and take down what he said. And she knew that I took shorthand. And before every test that we had, particularly final exam, she asked to borrow my notes. And I said, well, you'll never read them because they're in shorthand. She said, well, don't you type them up to study from them? And I said, yes. And she said, well, I'll wait until I get the typed copy. And so thereby I had some familiarity with the president's family because of his daughter needing my notes from that history class. But there were fun things like that that occurred that you would never expect. And I do remember the 44th birthday of President John F. Kennedy. At that time, Jacqueline had just lost a male child of theirs, and so she didn't come to the U.S. Armory that night. But I got to go, again, because I worked for a senior member of Congress, and the president sat on the dais right up from our table, again, because my member had been in Congress so long, we were given a preferred table. And so all evening, I looked up at President John F. Kennedy, Vice President Lyndon Johnson, and Lady Bird, and loved to tell my friends after that I was in such close view of the first family. And that was kind of a fun thing to brag about.
Very special. Boy, you really had a front row seat to history in our country.
Well, and those things were so personally considered in those days because everything seems smaller than today when I think if I were working at the Capitol today, heaven forbid, but there's so much controversy and divisiveness in our country that I don't think that I would have had the opportunity that I did back then.
Did you feel, as a woman working on the Hill at that time, that you were treated any differently than your male counterparts?
Absolutely not. And I'm glad you brought that up, Anne, because in those days, there was not so much pressure to give attention to the now movement, I guess you would say. And I really feel that the advancement that I received in each of the three congressional offices was due to the fact that I took such a personal interest in helping the member. And I just believe it was far easier to be close to people in those days.
What do you remember from kind of going a little further forward, the sort of 70s period, the Nixon era, Watergate?
Well, I'll tell you, I was eating dinner with a number of friends at a restaurant on K Street, sitting right next to the table where Tip O'Neill, who was Speaker of the House during the Nixon administration, was seated. And there was a TV there. And during the dinner hour, the news came on that President Nixon was resigning because he knew he was going to be impeached if he didn't resign. And of course, there was quite a stir among both tables because this was history in the making. And I do remember the sadness of everybody that this was happening. And it had nothing to do with Republican and Democrat. It was just a feeling that this was a tragedy that we all had to share. And again, I do think it was so much easier in those days to share, whether it be empathy, compassion, or maybe even guilt and shame.
I could listen to you talk all day long about wonderful memories, places you've been and jobs you've had. I want to ask you about something that first attracted me to you, which is your energy and optimism and enthusiasm for life. Where does that come from?
Well, I'll tell you, I felt so fortunate to have come from a sharecropper's family, perhaps, to have gotten the opportunity not only to go to business school, but to graduate from a well-known university, George Washington University. And I saved enough money from working every day while I was still in school that after I graduated, I took a 6-week trip to Europe and Asia to see the museums and galleries that I had studied about as an art history and theory student. I went by myself, but I had saved $5,000, which doesn't seem like a lot of money today, but it was when I went to Europe, and I got to do many first-class things, which added to my excitement about the education I had received culturally, because coming from a sharecropper family, there wasn't much shared by members of our family in art or, you know, it just wasn't a way of life for my family. But they were so proud of me and the fact that I was learning new things to share with them only added to the excitement that fortunately I've been able to retain.
You've had some sadness in your life.
Yes.
And some tragedy.
Right. Well, yes, I have. I lost both my parents in their early 60s of congestive heart failure. And the cardiologist later told me it was because they had too much pork grease in their diets. And of course, later we learned that pork don't have sweat glands, and whatever they consume turns into a toxicity because it's still a part of their body that people who eat pork consume. I've never let it bother me, but I have felt so fortunate that I've always had an open mind, wanting to learn new things, and it continues to this day.
What are you learning about this week?
Well, I tell you what, I have a copy of Strong's Concordance to the Bible on my shelf, and I have been very fascinated that my television gives me Trinity Broadcasting System and the amount of knowledge that I have learned from biblical scholars. I don't take for granted, but I do use my Strong's Concordance to check out the validity of what they say, because I feel that though prophets in the Bible said years ago that Jesus's return, his second coming, was near, I do feel that we are currently in the end times, and no one knows when that will be, but I want to prepare myself to go directly to heaven whenever he appears. I want to be going with him.
You were to be going back to college today, what would you be studying?
Well, I probably would still be studying history, but maybe more so from a world standpoint rather than art per se, because I do think that things accomplished in the Middle East to bring together Christians and Arabs, Jews, is so important in this day and age. I'd like to know more about how that came about and if there's a hope of its continuance and spreading.
Now, you haven't mentioned brothers or sisters.
Yes, well, I do have a half-sister who's 11 and a half years younger than I, but we were the only two of our family.
And you have a daughter?
I have a daughter who lives just 37 miles south of me. She and her husband both went to James Madison University in Harrisonburg, where he is still employed. And she is a stay-at-home mother of a child who is on the autism spectrum, but who now is in community college himself and doing very, very well. And I visit them at least a couple of times a month, or they come here.
And I know you live a very active life because I see you coming and going around the neighborhood. So what are some of the things that you're doing to keep yourself?
Well, I tell you, I'm an avid golfer. And of course, my house is above the 16th hole of the golf course. So literally all I have to do is roll down the hill to play golf. And I did that for many, many years until arthritis took over my left hip. But now that I've had that hip replaced, I hope to be doing that again very soon.
Tell me about some of that travel you mentioned, some amazing places you've
Yes.
visited.
My late husband died in 2006, and his best friend was still here on the mountain, and he and I are very close friends. We bought a motorhome and traveled all over the United States, visited 49 of the contiguous states, didn't get to Hawaii, but went to Alaska three times, to the Canadian Maritimes, spent a lot of time in the Yukon of Canada, because of course, if you're going by motor vehicle, you have to go through the Yukon. And we also went to Mexico a couple of times. So I have traveled widely, and one of the things I so enjoy now is watching Ken Burns' videos about places that he has made famous, because most of them I've seen. And of course, my enthusiasm continues, because having been a part of these places physically myself, I want to spread that kind of information to my grandson, to my daughter and her husband. And every year I take them on a family vacation, and we are now visiting those places which I had done previously. And there's nothing so beautiful as being able to introduce those you love to a new experience.
So is this the life you imagined for yourself?
I didn't imagine it would be this good. So that's been surprising. And I remember when I worked in Dr. Purvis's office at Strayer College, and the call came in from Capitol Hill because they wanted someone to come and fill in for a girl that was having a baby. When the call was returned to me, I was, you know, wondering why. And the answer was, because you have a mesmerizing voice. And first place, I needed the Strong's Concordance probably to look up the word mesmerizing. But I think it is because I'm so enthusiastic about everything that other people are sort of drawn to the magic of the enthusiasm.
So you've always had that high energy, enthusiastic.
Yes, tone. Because I never envisioned that the opportunities that came my way were even possible until it happened.
How would you like to be remembered?
While living, she lived.
Wonderful.
And I just believe that every day that is given us by our Creator, we have to make the most of that day.
And what are the lessons that you want to pass on to that grandson?
Well, fortunately, his faith is so magnetic itself. He went to a private Bible school as an undergraduate, and I was able to help in that mission. And his faith in all that the Lord Jesus Christ is going to give him will mean that he reaches horizons that his grandmother never even thought about.
Wonderful. Are you optimistic for our future here?
I definitely am. I think even during this pandemic that people, while quarantined or isolated from others, sought the Lord. And I think that gives us all increased hope.
Have you stayed in touch with any of your friends from Capitol Hill?
Absolutely, absolutely. There's nothing like unlimited cell phone time. And I love to talk.
Wonderful. What are your plans for the summer?
Well, now that I've had my hip replaced, I want to walk. And hopefully get back on the golf course where I can make other people envious of my abilities.
Are you going to maybe teach me how to golf a little bit?
I would love to.
I would appreciate it.
I taught one of our mutual friends a great many of things to the point where she beat me for the club championship.
You know, I'm here in your office and just looking around at all the memories and the books and the art. I'm wondering, you could just pick one thing that really speaks to you and share it with us.
Well, this is my sharecropper dad teaching my only daughter to hide Easter eggs.
And what do you think when you look at that picture?
I think how terrific it was that she had a grandfather who took the time to do the simplest things that he knew would make his granddaughter happy. Just look at that. The intimacy of just the sharing. And this is what she thought I looked like. Always reading and studying.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing just a little bit of your life story with us.
Well, I tell you, none of it would have been possible without our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And for that, I am so grateful that I had early training from my parents, and not only sending me to church, but taking me and letting me have full advantage of the Word of God, which makes me function today.
Helps through the hard times and the good times.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, thank you.